You are Locked On Seahawks, your daily Seattle Seahawks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Greetings, 12s. I'm Corbin Smith, your host for Locked On Seahawks. We're in full throttle off-season mode with the Senior Bowl underway. I'll be joined again by Rob Rang later in the show with his daily analysis from Mobile, Alabama. And we'll also take a look at the Seahawks draft class and how they performed in their rookie seasons. Let's get to it. Now for your lead story here on Locked On Seahawks. Last year, the Seahawks had nearly $26 million in dead cap on the books. This severely restricted their flexibility building the roster heading into the 2019 season. They were looking mostly for bargain free agents, and I expect that's still to be the main thing the Seahawks do this offseason. John Schneider typically has not been going after big fish, but they were severely restricted by all that dead cap that was on the books last year, mainly coming from Cam Chancellor and Doug Baldwin, who both were released with failed physicals in May. Those two players had very large dead cap charges that are no longer going to be on the books in 2020. So that's going to give them a lot of flexibility. According to Jason Fitzgerald of Over the Cap, the Seahawks will have an estimated $57.9 million in cap space available to start the league year. And there's a chance that number could go up north of $70 million. All of it depends on what the Seahawks choose to do with a few of their veterans that carry big cap hits going into this 2020 season, the most notable being Justin Britt. His cap hit is north of $11 million this year, and he's coming off a torn ACL, so there's a lot of speculation. What are the Seahawks going to do? Are they going to try to restructure his deal? Are they going to offer an extension to lower that cap hit? If they're not able to do either one of those things, is this going to be a cap casualty that ends up creating $8 million plus in cap room for the Seahawks? All of those are possible to happen with Justin Britt, considering his circumstances. The Seahawks would love to have him back. He's a valued member in that locker room. He's very close with Russell Wilson. Up until this injury that he suffered, a torn ACL in Week 8 against the Falcons, he's been very durable for the Seattle Seahawks since coming out of Missouri. So there's a lot of reasons to keep him, but that cap hit is something that they would love to lower and make it a little less expensive to carry him on the roster. The other two veterans worth noting, Ed Dixon still has 1 year left in his deal. He did not play at all in 2018. He's going to be 33 years old. I would be surprised if the Seahawks don't make a move to open up a little bit of cap space there. And DJ Fluker, I think, is going to be on the roster in 2020. Still got 1 year left in his deal. He was still a pretty solid right guard for the Seahawks. I don't think the Seahawks want to go into this next season without him when they could potentially lose Jermaine Ifedi, George Fant, and Mike Iupati as well. Pete Carroll's talked about continuity and maintaining the offensive line. I don't expect them to add to that by releasing DJ Fluker. But if they cut all three of those players, they would have north of $70 million in cap space. There's ways they can create even more financial flexibility. Looking at the priorities in the offseason, first things first. Seattle has some of its own free agents to negotiate with. Jadeveon Clowney is the biggest name. He is going to command north of $20 million per year. There are some reports out there he's going to be looking for $22 or $23 million per year. The Seahawks are going to have to open up the checkbook if they want to keep Clowney, a player that only had 3 sacks last year, but the statistics really didn't bear out how significant, how impactful he was for Seattle's defense, and he was battling an injury for most of the second part of the season. Fully healthy, they want to see what he can do with another full season. Both parties sound interested in renewing this relationship in a long-term deal. Just have to wait and see if the Seahawks are willing to pay the price it's going to take to make that happen. Staying on the defensive line, Jaron Reed did not have a good 2019. He was suspended the first 6 games, only had 2 sacks in 10 games for the Seahawks. Just was not the same disruptive force he was in 2018 when he finished with a career-high 10.5 sacks, but he can still fetch some money out in the open market. He might be asking for $12-plus million per year and get that on the open market. The one thing that may be working against him, this is a very deep defensive line free agent group, and if a bunch of other players are getting money, that may end up stifling the financial possibilities for a player like Reed, who is coming off a season that wasn't great by his standards. So that's what I'm interested to see how it shakes out. And there are some other notable free agents to consider as well. I mentioned Ifedi and George Fant. If the Seahawks don't keep either one of those players, they're going to be putting Jamarco Jones or a different player in at right tackle across from Dwayne Brown. There would be a lot of changes at the tackle position. There's a chance they could try to bring back one of those players. I find it hard to believe both will be back in Seattle. Mike Iupati, maybe you bring him back on another one-year deal. They're excited about the potential for Phil Haynes, though, at the left guard position. And then on defense, two other defensive tackles away from Jaron Reed that I think are important players. Quentin Jefferson is a versatile guy up front, can play defensive tackle, defensive end. He's got 25 quarterback hits the last 2 years, so he's not going to rack up sacks, but he's been a disruptive pass rusher for the Seattle Seahawks. And Al Woods, the veteran run-stuffing defensive tackle, they missed him when he was suspended at the end of the season. That was a huge loss for Seattle's defense, really hurt them defending the run. I could see Seattle bringing him back on another one-year deal. So they've got all those players they've got to consider whether they're going to sign him or not. And then, of course, there are a few other key players who could be up for early extensions, Shaquille Griffin and Chris Carson. They're both entering the final year of the rookie deal. An argument can be made for and against re-signing Chris Carson because he's a running back that's had some injury issues, but certainly he has earned a new deal with two straight 1,000-yard-plus seasons. And Shaquille Griffin, coming off a Pro Bowl campaign, first Pro Bowl in his career, has made tremendous progress, still just 24 years old. Seems very likely that he is going to be getting an extension at some point. Without Wilson and Wagner negotiating this year, maybe Griffin will get an early contract and will get extended before the start of the 2020 season. Those two players are guys worth watching. Depending on who the Seahawks bring back, that's going to impact the flexibility they're going to have going after outside free agents. But even if they bring back both Clowney and Reed, there still may be enough cash there to add another solid pass rusher, an interior run stuffer, maybe another tight end to add to the mix. And this is all before the draft. As I mentioned earlier, going after big fish, that has not been Seattle style under John Schneider. He hasn't really splurged in a free agent signing since Sidney Rice and Zach Miller early in his tenure. So that's not something that should be expected. But if Clowney and Reed both hit free agency and leave, the checkbook is going to get opened up. They're going to go after players like Yannick Ngakoue and Chris Jones, who would both fill major voids for the Seahawks on defense. If those guys are on the market, don't get franchised, and they're available, I can see the Seahawks being much more aggressive than normal because of the cap flexibility that they have going into this offseason. Coming up next in the second quarter, I'll hand out some grade cards for each of Seattle's 11 draft picks and discuss how their performance may affect Seattle's plans moving into this offseason. You're listening to the Locked On Seahawks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. Before we move forward, let's talk about sex. Good sex. Remember the days when you were always ready to go and you could increase your performance and get that extra confidence in bed? Listen up. BlueChew.com. That's blue like the color blue. BlueChew brings you the first chewable with the same FDA-approved active ingredients as Viagra and Cialis, so you know they work. You can take them anytime, day or night, even on a full stomach. And since they're chewable, they work up to twice as fast as a pill, so you can be ready whenever an opportunity arises. Now, this isn't just for guys who can't perform, it's for any guy who wants extra function to enhance their performance in the bedroom. Blue Chew is prescribed online and ships straight to your door in a discreet package, so no in-person doctor's visit, no waiting in the pharmacy, and best of all, no more awkwardness. They're made in the USA, and since Blue Chew prepares and ships direct, they're cheaper than a pharmacy. Right now, we've got a special deal for our listeners. Visit BlueChew.com and get your first shipment free when you use our special promo code LOCKEDON. Just pay $5 shipping. Again, that's BlueChew.com. Promo code LOCKEDON to try for free. Blue Chew is the better, cheaper, faster choice, and we thank them for sponsoring the podcast. We talk about physical fitness a lot on this podcast, but there's another side to the game that's just as important. I'm talking about mental fitness. Calm, the number one app for sleep and meditation, has teamed up with LeBron James to help you train your mind. LeBron and Calm know that your mind is like any other muscle in your body, and Calm can help you train your brain so you sleep better, have less stress, and perform at your best. For LeBron James, sleep is an important part of his mental fitness routine. He says, getting good sleep and finding time to rest is one of the most valuable things I can do for my body and mind. And if you head to calm.com/lockedon, you'll get 40% off a Calm premium membership. With Calm, you have access to the nature scenes LeBron loves, like rain on leaves, and so much more. For a limited time, our listeners can join LeBron in using Calm with a 40% discount to an annual membership at calm.com/lockedon. Unlock content to help you focus, ease stress, and sleep better. Get started at calm.com/lockedon. That's calm.com/lockedon. Welcome back to the Locked On Seahawks podcast. I'm your host, Corbin Smith. Rob Rang will be joining to close out the show with some thoughts from Wednesday's Senior Bowl in Mobile and some prospects who may appeal to the Seahawks in this year's upcoming draft. Speaking of drafts, now that the Seahawks have officially turned the page to 2020, let's take a look back at the rookie campaigns for all 11 of Seattle's draft picks from a year ago and how those picks impact what Seattle may or may not do this offseason. This is a group that John Schneider and Pete Carroll were both fired up about. The ability to turn four picks into 11 new players through a series of trades. Schneider was masterful pulling all these moves last April, and they thought this group was going to make an immediate impact. There's still plenty of excitement about the future of this class, but unfortunately, only a handful of these players wound up contributing as hoped in their first NFL seasons. Let's start with the most disappointing one right off the bat. First-round pick LJ Collier, 29th overall selection for the Seahawks. It's really tough to find any semblance of a bright spot for Collier in his rookie year. He played in 11 games. He finished with just 3 tackles. Really an invisible man for the Seattle Seahawks. It wasn't all his fault. He had an ankle injury in the preseason that prevented him from playing, really set him back. He couldn't catch up. The numbers game was not working in his favor with all the other defensive linemen the Seahawks had on the active roster, and he just wasn't able to prove himself. So he's got to stay healthy this offseason. I would not write him off yet and say he's a bust, but certainly this was as disappointing of a rookie campaign as what you can have. There's no other grade you can give him but an F. And the thing that's most disappointing about it, with him not proving that he can be a game changer in any capacity, and maybe he ends up being that player in 2020 with another offseason under his belt, he can emerge like Rasheem Green did last year. But assuming that that doesn't happen, the Seahawks are going right back to the drawing board looking for defensive line help, edge rushers. They could be, as I mentioned the first quarter, very active trying to improve that defensive line in free agency. And when they picked Collier in the first round, I don't think they envisioned that being something they'd necessarily have to do. But with him not performing, that creates a big void, and they need to add to that defensive line. So there's nothing I can give Collier but an F after this season. I'm hoping with another offseason being healthy, continuing to work on technique, that he can come out and contribute for the Seahawks in 2020, but this was certainly not the rookie year they were anticipating from him. Their second pick, Marquise Blair, somewhat similar situation. He was not playing very much at the beginning of the season. The first 5 or 6 games, played very few defensive snaps, was just stuck on special teams. Then he finally got a chance to start, and I thought he played well. Or in those 3 starts, he registered 22 tackles, a pass defense, and a forced fumble. And then the Seahawks made the move to acquire Quandre Diggs, and that pushed him back to the bench. He didn't play much defense the rest of the year. Showed off his hard-hitting mentality when he was on the field, though. He forced another fumble in the season finale against the 49ers, made some nice plays on special teams. The big issue all year long was that this team simply did not have enough trust in him, knowing the scheme and understanding his assignments. That's why Tedrick Thompson started the year at free safety. That's why when they acquired Diggs, and even after Diggs got hurt, they went to Lano Hill. There was a trust factor. They were worried about his understanding of the scheme. If he wants to play more in 2020, he has to show he's mastered the defense. He's got to cut down on those botched assignments. If he can do that, there's no question about the physical skills. He's a hard hitter. He's athletic. He can make plays in coverage. But none of that matters if you're not getting lined up in the right spot and doing your assignment properly. So I'm giving him a C-. He showed some things on special teams. He showed some flashes that show you that he may be a starter down the road. But the understanding scheme aspect, that problem has to be taken care of if he wants to be a full-time starter in the NFL. The Seahawks believe he's going to get it figured out. But the clock is ticking going into year 2. He's in a better place than Collier, but he's going to be another player that really needs a strong offseason so that he can make a much bigger impact for the Seahawks in year 2. Now, let's talk about the one player that really made a difference, and that's DK Metcalf. Talk about silencing your critics. Comes out in game 1, 89 receiving yards in his NFL debut. sets a Seahawks franchise record, just dwarfing over defenders with that big 6'4", 230-pound frame. 58 receptions, 900 receiving yards, 7 touchdowns on the year. He was in the top 15 for yards per reception for the NFL this year as well, 15.5 yards per catch. Just a sensational year. There's certainly things to work on. He's got to get more polished still as a route runner. 58% catch rate isn't where he'd like it to be. Fumbled the football 3 times. He had 7 drops. So there are certainly areas that he can continue to improve. But what a sensational rookie season that DK Metcalf had. Best pick the Seahawks have had so far. A-, a home run pick for the Seahawks, adding a weapon for Russell Wilson. Another pick that I'm pretty excited about, their third round selection, Cody Barton. He was forced into the starting lineup when Michael Kendricks had a hamstring injury and then tore his ACL late in the year. And I thought he did a pretty good job. He improved each time that he was out there. He gradually improved by week. I think he looks like a potential future starter for the Seahawks. He had a couple really nice games at the end of the year. 10 tackles against the Panthers in week 15. Had a really nice game against the Eagles in the wild card round, showing off his coverage skills against Boston Scott and Miles Sanders, two really good running backs out of the backfield catching the football. 2 passes defense, had a sack in that game as well. Run fits are something he's going to have to work on. His run defense as a whole, not near as polished in that area. So that's something this offseason he's really got to work at, containing the edge. Want to be a full-time starter? Those are the areas he's got to show growth in going into next season. But I'm giving this pick a B-. I thought he played pretty well when he got the opportunity late in the year. Did some nice things on special teams. And the Seahawks won't have to worry about necessarily drafting a linebacker. They're pretty set at that position here for the next few years. The next pick, first of 3 fourth-round selections the Seahawks had, Gary Jennings. He's no longer on the roster. And what went right? Really, the only thing that went right was he didn't become the next Chris Harper from 2013 and get cut at the end of the preseason. He was able to stick on the roster, didn't dress for a single game. Then Josh Gordon gets claimed off waivers. Bye-bye. Jennings gets cut. He's claimed by the Miami Dolphins. So now he's going to have to try to get his career going in Miami, no longer in Seattle. That one clearly is getting an F, a wasted pick, no games under his belt in Seattle. The second fourth rounder, Phil Haynes, another player that really was disappointing, but his issue was injuries. He was on the PUP list from the start of training camp, had surgery for a sports hernia, and then was on the PUP list to open the year. Finally got activated in early November, did not play any snaps the rest of the regular season, though. We didn't know what he was capable of doing. It completely derailed his rookie season. But then in the playoffs, he gets called upon with Jamarco Jones getting concussed. Mike Iupati's already out with a neck injury. They throw him in at left guard. I thought he played admirably. You can check out my film breakdown on the Seahawk Maven website. Thought he did a really nice job, given the fact he hadn't played any NFL snaps in the regular season before. And he's going to have a shot now to compete for a starting role in 2020. Obvious things he needs to work on based on the game film. Had some issues in pass protection, driving defenders off the ball. I think a lot of it's experience-based, though. I mean, this is the first snaps that he had in an NFL game. He's got to get used to blocking for Russell Wilson, which is a lot different than blocking for most quarterbacks because of his mobility and ability to stretch plays, extend them outside of the pocket. I'm giving a D-plus on this one. I would have gone with a D-minus or even an F because he didn't play at all, but at least they got to see something in the playoffs, and there's a glimmer of hope Phil Haynes can be a starter for the Seahawks next season. And the third and final fourth-round pick for the Seahawks, Ugo Amadi, I thought he was probably the second-best rookie for the Seahawks this year overall. He didn't hold on to the starting nickel job at the beginning of the year, but he really provided a spark on special teams, downed a bunch of punts inside the opposing 5-yard line, no missed tackles on defense or special teams. Once he got into the nickel position at the end of the year, almost had a pick 6 against Carolina. I thought he played really well in the wild card win against Philadelphia. He's just going to need more experience, and that goes back to what Pete Carroll said. There's some regrets not playing him at that nickel spot earlier. He just needs more reps. He was only targeted 11 times, but he gave up 9 receptions for 83 yards, a bunch of yards after the catch. They're going to bring in some competition to go against him in 2020, but I think he's the favorite to be your starting slot corner next season. And I'm going to give him a solid B because of how well he played on special teams and rising to the occasion late in the year. Swinging to the fifth round, Ben Burkervin, back at linebacker, key special teams player. And I think right now that's where his ceiling is at because I just don't know where he's going to fit on defense. He's undersized at 230 pounds. with the depth they've got. KJ Wright had a phenomenal bounce back season. He's not going anywhere. Bobby Wagner's there. Cody Barton is there. Shaquem Griffin's going to have a role. I don't know there's a spot for him on defense right now unless there's injuries, which you hope that's not the case. He's going to continue to work at weak side and middle linebacker. Eventually, he may get some playing time down the road. But right now, he's got to look at Heath Farwell, former Seahawks linebacker that really excelled on special teams. That's what he should be modeling after. Did some nice things on special teams, over 300 snaps on the special teams unit. Only Barton had more. I'm going to give him a C-minus because of that. He had a decent year on special teams and didn't get a chance to see him really do anything else, only a couple snaps on defense. And like you said, I don't know if we're going to see that with the depth that they have at linebacker right now, if we're going to see him out there on the field defensively much, even in his second season. In the sixth round, the Seahawks made two picks. First one got on the field late in the year. Travis Homer, Chris Carson goes down. Rashad Penny goes down. CJ Procise, no surprise, goes down. All three of those players are on injured reserve. You see the explosiveness from Travis Homer, the rookie out of Miami, 62 yards on 10 carries when they played the 49ers in week 17, caught 11 passes, outstanding in pass protection. That's the thing I still love about this kid. 217 snaps on special teams as well. He returned some kicks late in the season. This guy does a little bit of everything. Not a guy that's going to be able to run between the tackles very much at just 200 pounds. I don't think he's a workhorse back, but I think, especially considering Rashad Penny still coming back from an ACL injury, may not be ready at the beginning of the year. You look at his special teams talent, the ability to pass protect. Homer could be Seattle's third down back opening the 2020 season. I'm giving him a B-. It was a really solid end of the season for him, stepping up when Seattle needed help in the backfield. His fellow sixth-round pick, DeMarcus Christmas, I don't really have anything to say about him aside from the fact he didn't play any snaps this year. I'm going to give him an I for his grade, meaning incomplete. We don't know what DeMarcus Christmas can do because he was on the PUP list the entire season. They kept him around, but did not get a chance to get activated. Phil Haynes did. Christmas was healthy enough that just wasn't a roster spot for him. So it's really impossible to evaluate. I do think he's got a chance this next offseason, especially if Jaron Reed leaves. There may be an opportunity for Christmas to get himself into the rotation for Seattle in what really will be his rookie season. He'll be starting from scratch again when the team reconvenes in April. I think he'll have an opportunity potentially to get some snaps, and maybe that impacts how the Seahawks draft. I could still see them bringing in a defensive tackle, especially if Reed is gone. And then wrapping things up, John Ursua, I'm giving the grade a D- because I'm just disappointed in how little he played. I'm not going to blame the player here. He finally gets a chance in Week 17, nearly catches the game-winning touchdown against the 49ers near the end of regulation. That was the only target that he had in the regular season. So I guess that's the good note. He finished with 100% catch rate, but did not get to see the field. Only 11 total snaps all year at receiver, and some of those were when the Seahawks were taking knees at the end of games. He just didn't get chances, and it perplexed me a little bit, especially when you consider Josh Gordon got suspended. I thought he'd get more reps. It's tough to make an assessment on him because when he was out there, he did make the catch on the only target he had. Just not enough plays to really evaluate him. He's got to contribute on special teams. I think that's a big key. Can he find a way to get on special teams next year? That will really improve his chances. Pete Carroll's talked him up of getting more chances at wide receiver as well. In year two, you absolutely got to let this kid, let him go, unleash him at that slot position. But disappointed he wasn't used more. So for that reason, going to go with a D-. He's going to get his opportunities next year. But with what happened to Jennings and Ursua not playing much last year, again, I think the Seahawks will be active looking for at least one receiver in this upcoming draft. Upon our return from the break, Rob is in Mobile. He's going to join us again to share his thoughts on what he observed at today's Wednesday practices for the North and South squads at the Senior Bowl. You won't want to miss it. We'll be right back. You're listening to the Locked On Seahawks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. Welcome back. Glad to have you joining us here on the Locked On Seahawks podcast. I'm your host, Corbin Smith, rejoining us here for the third quarter from Mobile, Alabama. Rob Rang, he's enjoying the Senior Bowl. Yesterday, we had a chance to catch up on some prospects that stood out on Tuesday to kickstart the week. And now we're going to look at Wednesday, things really heating up at the Senior Bowl. Let's talk some players that really stood out to you today. First one that jumps off the list, we're going to stick with the offensive line because why not? The Seahawks are always looking for offensive line help. And Houston's got a big tackle by the name of Josh Jones that looks to be making some waves in Mobile.
Yeah, he really is, Corbin. I mean, he measured it at 6'5", 311 pounds, and that's one of the first things is that, is this a player who is going to measure up as his team, listed him as, and he did exactly that. He was listed at 6'5", 310 pounds. He has adequate arm length, 33 5/8 arms. It's a little bit below average, but it's not bad. And then you just see the physicality with which he plays. And so I thought that he has been about as consistent as any of the offensive tackles that have been in the Senior Bowl this year. Really physical at the point of attack. He has just tree trunks for thighs. And so that projects very well as going to be as a run blocker just because of his strength at the point of attack. Had a nice set of reps today in pass protection. I like his physicality. I like his durability. He was a very durable player while at Houston. A year ago, it was Ed Oliver, the defensive tackle, who wound up being a first-round pick. And a lot of people blasted him and said, oh, he wasn't as consistent as you'd like. That's the thing. This kid, Josh Jones, is the exact opposite of that. He has been ultra-consistent throughout his career. And that's why I don't know that he necessarily makes sense for Seattle 27, perhaps. But certainly, if he was available in the second round, then he would make a lot of sense as possibly a plug-and-play kind of a guy at the tackle position.
It's a different assessment than what I've heard about Josh Jones from looking back at Houston film, talking to a few other people before this week. There were a lot of concerns about technical stuff, and I think that's still something to keep an eye on. But it, to me, is very assuring that he's going out against this top competition, and he is showing off how physical he is. He's holding his own in pass pro. You can see, as you mentioned, the lower body power that he plays with. Certainly has the capability to be a great run blocker. I still think this is a player that needs to have the right coaching staff that's working with him on technique, but there's no question about the athlete that you're getting. Really light on his feet. That's the thing that jumped out to me the couple games that I was able to watch. There were times I wondered about his hand placement, some of that technical stuff. That can all be worked on, though. So I think this is certainly good news, though. If he's going up against this really good competition at the Senior Bowl and he's looking this good, that bodes well. That being said, we have seen some players at the Senior Bowl that have put together really good practice sessions, and then they get to the NFL and it doesn't always translate. So we'll have to just wait and see. On the defensive side of the football, yesterday we talked about a couple big defensive tackles. Particularly, we were looking at Javon Kinlaw. We're going to stay in the SEC now. Ole Miss, they've had some good defensive linemen come into the league recently, though that hasn't always translated to NFL success. Robert Kendiche. And Josiah Coatney is the latest player from Ole Miss that is creating some shockwaves at the Senior Bowl.
No, he really is. And Coatney is an interesting guy. We started off with Josh Jones, and when I did my write-up on him, the player comparison I gave him was former Seahawks first-round pick and longtime Seattle player Russell Okung. And when I see Josiah Coatney, there's a lot of Jaron Reed that I see in this young man. And considering the fact that Jaron Reed, of course, is a pending free agent, and Seattle may have to replace him, and they're going to be looking for a guy who has that quick twitch to be able to give you a little bit of as a three technique, be able to get some disruptive ability there. At the same time, he also has to be strong enough to be able to hold up at the point of attack. You want him to be able to complement what you already have with Puna Ford, of course. And that's one of the things with Coatney who I've been impressed by, just because he is showing the burst to be able to cross the face of the center and the guards, be able to split the gaps and be able to be a penetrator. He also is showing terrific power as well. Now, he is not a guy, just like Jaron Reed, when he's coming out of Alabama as a junior college prospect, same with Coatney, not a guy who is as, completely technically sound yet, but you see the traits that lead you to believe that he can be a better NFL player. Has been very consistent at Ole Miss the last three seasons for them, so this is the guy who's a little bit off the radar a little bit, but he is absolutely making a name for himself this week in Mobile.
One thing that jumps out to me looking at Coatney is not a player that I'd watched really up close and personal. I haven't really looked closely at him, but I did watch a couple games today. One thing that jumped out to me, though, looking at his stats, he had pretty darn good tackle totals the last 3 years for a defensive tackle. I believe he eclipsed 60 tackles two different times for the Rebels. That's pretty impressive for a defensive tackle. So he's definitely a guy that's going to rack up tackles. Not quite as many tackles for loss as what maybe you would suspect. He's shown a little bit of potential as a pass rusher. I guess this is my big question with him. I've seen places where he was listed at 325 pounds. I believe he weighed in at 309 at the Senior Bowl. So he is a little lighter maybe than people anticipated coming into this week.
Yeah, exactly. That's one of the things we talked about before with Josh Jones, is that it's always interesting to me that the players who wind up measuring a little bit bigger, a little bit smaller than their listed size. And so Cotney coming in, you know, roughly 15 pounds lighter. I don't know if Ole Miss just listed him differently. DK Metcalf, of course, came from Ole Miss a year ago. He's going to know Cotney well. And Metcalf was reasonably well listed by Ole Miss previously. With Cotney, it might just be the fact that he's trying to lose some weight and be that much quicker this week, just given how big of a week that it is for him. But if he did lose some weight, then you can see it in his play, because he really has been kind of wreaking havoc, especially today. And Wednesday's practices are the most important practice. A lot of the scouts are leaving tomorrow. And the game itself is like any other All-Star game. It's all about just getting everybody repetition. So this was considered to be the biggest day of practice. And certainly Cotney was among the best players on the field for that South squad this year.
Perfect segue to the next player here. You talked about DK Metcalf coming from Ole Miss, a receiver, and then a former Ole Miss receiver that ended his college career at Florida, Van Jefferson. Maybe a name that hasn't been talked about as much going into this pre-draft process. There's a lot of big-name receivers. This is a loaded receiving class, and yet Van Jefferson has been one of those players that's been gradually getting more buzz the last couple days, has had two outstanding days of practice, maybe putting his name on the mark a little bit in a loaded receiver class.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's the thing. That's what I love so much about this All-Star game situation, Corbin, is that you really do get an opportunity to see these guys that maybe weren't surrounded by the best scheme to fit their talents. And Florida, you know, they ran the ball so much. They didn't get the ball into the hands of their wide receivers so much. And Van Jefferson really has taken advantage of this opportunity. He has made some spectacular receptions over the last couple of days, as you mentioned. Just a terrific athlete, showing his quickness, his fluidity. There were some times in some of the receiver drills early on where I thought, okay, this is the guy who's a little bit stiff. But then once they allowed him actually to kind of get out there and play ball rather than just running drills, then he really, his hand-eye coordination, his body control, his aggression has stood out. There are a lot of big-name wide receivers sitting here in Mobile, and Van Jefferson has made as many big plays as any of them, including today, where he had some spectacular grabs, really high-pointing the pass, and really creating a buzz in the stands with his play. So I think that he entered this week as possibly a late-round draft pick, maybe not even a for-sure draft pick, but I certainly believe that if everything checks out as far as the off-field stuff, that he is going to wind up getting himself selected perhaps as early as the middle rounds.
I think he has been one of the players that certainly improved his stock the most these first couple days in the Senior Bowl. And the thing that jumps out, you mentioned how much Florida runs the ball. Van Jefferson never had more than 49 receptions in a season in college, and he's been in college for 5 years. He transferred away from Ole Miss to Florida, and he's going to be 24 years old before the 2020 season starts. So he's another one of those players that is going to be a little on the older side when he enters the league. There's some things about him that certainly fit what Seattle's looking for. He's coming from an offense that runs the ball a lot, and he's a very good run-blocking receiver. That's a prerequisite to play in Seattle. You better be willing and able to block. The guys they've got there are willing to do that right now. Van Jefferson would fit that mold. He's a really good route runner. You can see that in some of the clips that are going around from Mobile. You can see that on display against some of the top senior corners in the nation. He's putting that route running savvy on display. Not the eye-popping athlete. I'm really curious to see what he's going to do in the combine. Those numbers could really determine. He's one of those players that actually could have his draft status determined by what he does in Indianapolis, because you're seeing the football skills Does he have the athletic traits necessarily that teams are looking for? We'll have to wait and see on that. Going back to the defensive line, we're going back to a big name this time. This is a guy that's had a lot of first-round buzz for months. That's Neville Gallimore out of Oklahoma. If you've watched the Sooners at all, this is one of their main defensive stalwarts, and he's a guy, as I mentioned, there's been a lot of discussion about first-round with him for months. He might be the other guy away from Javon Kinlaw that has an opportunity to get into the top 15 in the first round.
Yeah, top 15 would be a touch rich for me, but I say that he has been a very productive player throughout his career. He is a guy who's better at getting to the quarterback than his 8.5 career sacks would suggest. Only 4 sacks this past season, but at the same time, you see the quick twitch, and then when you see this guy, it's kind of like we talked about before with Prince Tagovailoa during yesterday's show, that some guys are just built to play football, and Neville Gallimore certainly is that. I mean, he is just an imposing physical specimen. I mean, he is just, for a 300-plus pounder, his body is incredibly fit, just a big, hulking kind of a presence for his size. And so he's an interesting guy. He's a guy that I think would fit in well with Seattle because they are going to need more of a pass rush, and he can be able to provide that for you in the interior.
That's where my assessment comes in, because this is a player that I've actually watched quite a bit. I've gotten to watch Oklahoma a lot, and I'm going to be honest, I don't feel like I've watched him closely enough in some of those games to make a completely fair assessment here, but every time I watched Oklahoma, I thought they got carved up by teams that could run the ball. So that makes me wonder a little bit. I know that he's got the pass rushing diversity. I've seen the counter moves. He's got a pretty good toolbox rushing the passer for an interior guy. The physical tools you mentioned, I got to wonder about how he fits as a run defender, though. And that feels to me like something Seattle is still going to be emphasizing here, because Pete Carroll put so much priority into that last offseason, and yet late in the year, especially when Al Woods was suspended, they really had trouble slowing down opposing run games. So while if Jaron Reed's gone, they need that interior pass rushing presence, no doubt that this player could fulfill. I got to wonder a little bit about where he fits on the run defense spectrum. I'm going to continue to look at more film. Let's go to the secondary now. The name's going to make some of our listeners laugh because there's a certain MVP quarterback that goes by this name. But Lamar Jackson from Nebraska, this guy screams Seahawks cornerback, 6'3", 215 pounds. These are the kind of players Pete Carroll would create on Madden.
That's a good way of putting it. I mean, he absolutely would. And that's the thing about Lamar Jackson is that he not only has that height, he's got the arm length. I mean, it's been, one of the more widely, reported kind of numbers. The Seahawks love defensive backs as a 32-inch arms. He is one of the few corners in this draft, in Mobile this week, who has that arm length. And then he's also a very physical player. He's a heady player. He gets his head turned around when the ball is up in the air. So he's made a couple of spectacular plays throughout these first couple of practices as well. You mentioned, obviously, the fact that his name is Lamar Jackson. One of the other best corners this week so far has been a corner from Oklahoma State named A.J. Green. So maybe we're just getting too old. I don't know, Corbin, but there is a lot of guys that have a lot of familiar names out there, but they're familiar not only because of the predecessors that are having success in the NFL, but the fact that A.J. Green and Lamar Jackson are absolutely balling this week at the Senior Bowl. In my opinion, they have been the top two corners so far this week of practice.
I think a lot of our mothers here in America need to get more creative with their first names for their children. That's really the moral of the story here.
Yeah, and I think that's absolutely a good point, Corbin. But at the same time, there's one other play I would be remiss if I didn't mention, just because of the fact that, to me, as I mentioned before about the Senior Bowl and just really any All-Star game, the reason why I and so many of the NFL scouts go to these things is because you want to see that diamond in the rough, the player that maybe didn't get a lot of attention for his college team, but then gets this opportunity, really runs with it. And that would be Steven Sullivan, the tight end from LSU. Now, you know, the national champion Tigers had so many weapons on offense. So it's easy to understand why this former wide receiver turned tight end, who basically played backup behind Thaddeus Moss, the son of Randy Moss, redshirt sophomore, who wound up announcing his intentions to enter the draft early. He didn't really caught, I think, what, 9 or 10 passes so far, you know, in this last season. But at the same time, he has been spectacular throughout the week of practice, 12 passes for 130 yards this season for LSU. But at the same time, his length, his speed, his ability, again, the body control when the ball is up in the air. There's a couple of times that the quarterbacks this week have thrown the ball up in the air and just allowed this young man to go up and get it. He's showing some savviness with his route running. He showed better physicality as a run blocker than he expects. So, you know, I talked about it before. I thought the tight end was a position that Seattle – frankly, was lacking this past season, and obviously a big part of that was due to the injury to Will Dissly. But for we mentioned before Van Jefferson, the receiver from Florida, who maybe has helped himself as much as anybody this week so far, the Senior Bowl. I would argue that is exactly the same situation here with Sullivan, that he entered this week as basically a no-name. Now, I think that is a priority free agent at best, but he will get drafted based on how he's performing so far this week in Senior Bowl.
Yeah, he was overshadowed by Thaddeus Moss this entire season. He only played in 6 games for LSU, but I could actually see this benefiting him. When you play for the national champion, it's kind of like the Sean McVay effect a few years ago, where every NFL team that needed a head coach was looking for anybody that had, you know, stood next to Sean McVay as a candidate. I think if you play for the LSU Tigers, even if you weren't one of their top 3 or 4 receivers, the fact that you're coming from a national title team, that's going to carry a lot of weight. And then you come out and play really darn well in the Senior Bowl, going against all the nation's top seniors that are there from other teams, other NFL prospects, then that really puts you on the map. And hearing his size, the athletic metrics, it's another guy that can certainly continue to help himself if he's invited to the combine. That's certainly going to be a great opportunity for him to continue enhancing his profile. Seattle could certainly use help. Nick Lee and I talked on an earlier podcast that tight end is a position that certainly needs some reinforcements. Even if Will Dissly comes back healthy, he hasn't proven he can stay on the field. They got to have a fallback option that he can continue to develop. Sullivan may be an interesting wild card for them that's emerging this week in the NFL draft world. Make sure to follow me on Twitter at CorbinSmithNFL. You can follow Rob at Rob Rang. If you'd like to be a featured sponsor for our podcast, you can contact me, LockSeahawks@gmail.com. You can subscribe to our show on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, whatever your preferred podcast platform is, by going to our website, LockedOnSeahawks.com. Coming up on our Thursday show, we'll be starting to dissect individual position assessments for the Seahawks heading into this offseason. Going to start with the running back position and much more. You won't want to miss it. Enjoy the rest of your Wednesday. Go Hawks.